This panel is entitled, this workshop is entitled, "The Resistance Against the Racist War Machine," which, as I think the title suggests, will be looking at the U.S. military, which is not to say it is exclusively the only racist war machine in the world, but for our purposes here, we are going to be looking at the U.S. military machine in relation to our times, specifically the Gulf area and some more recent developments in Central America, Southeast Asia, Africa, and elsewhere. I don't know which direction the speakers are going to take it. I mean, we may wish to look more at the behavior of the U.S. military. We may want to look more at the participation of people of color in the U.S. military. We might wish to look at the attitude of the racist machine against people of color, or whichever. In the spirit of democracy and all that, I would not be so impertinent as to suggest to them which direction they ought to take it. Of course, if they don't take it in the proper direction, the chair will invoke the appropriate authority and put it back on course. I will make a very brief introductory remarks, and then we'll hear from Carl Dix, who is listed here with the Revolutionary Communist Party. We'll also be hearing from Yolande Brath, who is chair of the Patrice Lumumba Coalition. Then we'll hear from Esmeralda Brown, who is with Women's Workshop in the Americas. She happens to be also a national of Panama. And from Rabab Hadi, who is a Palestinian of the Palestine Solidarity Committee. And we will be, should be talking not only about the Palestinian question, but the Middle East in general. As I said, we are going to be focusing not so much on those struggles per se, although it will come out inevitably, but on the machine, the racist war machine that has, is operating against the people's struggles in those countries. Now, the title is a provocative one, that it's a racist machine, and I would argue that from the middle of this century, up until the middle of this century, that the United States war machine was no different from any other classic colonial imperialist war machine. It was not specifically a racist machine. Its wars, the colonial wars, the imperial wars had racial components, but it was not a racist machine per se. After all, Europeans were fighting Europeans. In fact, the Second World War was not about the North versus South or fighting against communism or people of color as such, but it was an inter-imperialist war between major European powers. But after the Second World War, at the end of the Second World War, the entire complexion, the entire coloration, if you will, of the globe changed. And every single war in which the United States has engaged in since then has been, in my view, fundamentally a racist war against nationalist forces, not communist forces, as is alleged, which was supposed to be the rationale of the so-called Cold War. Ironically, when Mr. Truman signed the act which permitted African Americans in particular and other people of color to participate in the armed forces in the United States, in other words, an affirmative action was employed in the U.S. armed forces. And we should remember, especially for those people who work with left organizations of a multinational character, that the armed forces of the United States, the police agencies of the United States, have an infinitely more attractive and a much more structured and democratic affirmative action program than any white left organization or left organization in this country. It's an objective fact. It's a painful one, but it happens to be a real one, a very one. From the top down, it's an extremely democratic institution when it comes to African-American participation. And the point of departure for that was, of course, the Truman Act in 1950, which resulted in the integration of the armed forces and then the subsequent democratic, if you will, and I'm using the word guardedly, participation of black people and other people of color in the U.S. armed forces. Since 1950, if you look at what has happened around the world, which has been done in the name of fighting communism, you will note that there are two constants. Number one, that every single war has been again not communists, but against fundamentally nationalist forces. Not every single war, but more, the overwhelming majority of wars in the so-called Third World, whether it was the so-called covert wars or assassinations or out-and-out invasions, whether it occurred in Iran but it occurred in Guyana, in Indonesia, in the Congo, in Ghana, you name it, Vietnam, Korea. In fact, one could say that Truman signed the order in order to prepare for the Korean War. But in every instance, it's been a war against people of color. And the great irony is that until the Chinese Revolution, where Forces 49 and consolidated itself later on, that there was no, and even after the Chinese Revolution, and with the proliferation of so-called communist states in all of Europe, there's never been one single act of military hostility against a European communist state since 1958. Yes, there's been psychological warfare, which I would argue is at least one quarter of what's responsible for the debacle that we're seeing in Eastern Europe today. But there's never been an act of war, a physical act of war, against white communists. Even when the white communists have been in power in France, as they have been in coalition governments, when they've been in power in Greece, as they've been in coalition governments, even when they control 32% of the Italian Congress, Parliament, which they still do to this very day, even when they ran the government, the entire government of San Marino, which they did for a period of 25 years, there has never been any communist intervention. Yes, there's been intervention against communists out of power in Greece and in Cyprus and so on, but not as members of a state structure. However, if you so much as mention that you happen to have read a book with a title or the word socialism in it, and then you attain power in the so-called third world, you're a prime target for assassination and overthrow, as we have seen. As I said, no need to recite the incidents of the Guatemalas and the Congos and so on and so forth. There are ample examples for everyone to look at. So on a global scale then, the thrust of the US war machine, in my estimation, has been against people of color in the post-World War II period, and it's been done in the name of fighting communism. But if you look at the orientation of someone like Patrice Lumumba, if you look at the orientation of the forces in other parts of the world which have run up against covert warfare and other military activities on the part of the United States, you will find that they were fundamentally nationalists. It might have been some communist and socialist elements, but basically these were nationalist formations and nationalist individuals who were simply trying to control their national resources for their own people's use. That's a crime. They were trying to control their own countries for their own people's consumption, and hence they had to go. If that weren't the case, one would have to ask oneself, why is it that now that the Cold War is supposedly over, that the United States is now still funding UNITA Contras in Angola? Jonas Savimbi 2 weeks ago got literally a cashier's check for $35 million. And the extraordinary session of the Central Committee of the People's Republic of Angola, concluding a meeting on October 25th in which they laid forward a peace plan to resolve the conflict in their country. And the very next morning, Jonas Savimbi, with U.S. tax dollars in his pocket, went ahead and blew up three bridges, killing some 111 people. And this is not my information. This is information put out by even the U.S. State Department itself, and after having paid for that kind of criminal conduct. And we can cite other examples in Southeast Asia, and where the wars against people of color continue, in Afghanistan, where the war continues. We're not here arguing whether or not the Soviets did this wrong or did this right or the other. The fact is that the United States continue to prosecute these wars against people of color. Now, in the next few minutes, as I said, the panelists are going to be focusing on a number of conflicts and so on in different parts of the world and how the U.S. machine impacts it against it. But I just want to mention a couple of things quickly. That when I talked about the affirmative action program of the United States Armed Forces, it's not an idle point. Because as we sit here in the Gulf, and the United States is preparing and whipping up the international sentiment to bring about a catastrophic war in the Gulf area, some 48% of the women who are in the armed forces of the United States in the Gulf area happen to be African women, African-American women, and 60% of those are mothers. Of all the Marine, in the Marine Corps, 22% of the Marines are African-Americans who are in the Gulf area. 16% of the Air Force personnel are African Americans, 12% of the Navy, and of course, as reflecting the kind of class structure that we see in the broader society, only 6% of the officer corps, including Mr. Colin Powell, or Colin Powell, if you prefer. So the affirmative action program was on one level to draw the African American and other people of color into the racist war machine at home to be used against people of color abroad. It's basically the sort of structure that we see in what I was suggesting since the middle of the Second World War. So hopefully today, by looking at these concrete situations, we'll be able to see how they manifest in Panama, in Palestine, and other parts of the Middle East, and other parts of the world. At this point, I'd like to introduce our first speaker, who is with the Revolutionary Communist Party, Mr. Carl Dix, who will share some perspectives on the U.S.'s racist war machine. Carl Dix.